the chance America is about to hit a poignant milestone, getting back to the number of jobs that existed before the economy collapsed 5 years ago.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. There is news today that American companies announced fewer layoffs January to March than in any first quarter since 1995. Might that be a hint of good things to come in the month's big employment report that's on the way? Let's consult Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial in Chicago. Morning, Diane.
Good morning.
So what do you think of the possibility that by this time tomorrow, we will know that the economy might have replaced all the jobs lost during the Great Recession?
I think it's not only possible, it's probable. All we need is a little more than 130,000 jobs to be generated in the private sector to reach our previous peak.
But what kind of jobs, right?
Well, that's the real, you know, the devil's in the details, and this is the devil. The bulk of the jobs we lost to the Great Recession were high-wage manufacturing, construction, and business services jobs. And since then, the overwhelming majority of jobs we generated have been low-wage and much more disproportionately part-time low-wage jobs. We're talking about minimum-wage jobs. And it's one of the reasons people called it, you know, a man session, because a lot of men lost their jobs in high-wage industries, and the people who got their jobs were women earning minimum wage.
Also, the population's been growing during that time. You would have hoped we would have had more jobs anyway.
Exactly. You know, even though you get up to the last level, everything's relative and you're chasing a moving target. And no matter how the unemployment rate is cut, the lowness of the unemployment rate is overstating improvement in the labor market. But let's face it, this labor market, as Janet Yellen said this week, looks more like it's harder for most people than a regular recession.
All right, Diane, you're a card-carrying economic forecaster. What is your forecast for payrolls? We'll know tomorrow morning at 8:30 if you're right.
Oh, gosh, this is a hard one because I'm somewhat optimistic on the month of March. I like to be optimistic, but I'm looking for 240,000 jobs. Is some of that, instead of the hibernation, the weather is still out there affecting us, but we had migration, and we went to a lot of sunny vacations, and they were hiring up low-wage jobs, but I think we'll still see that dominate as we move into the month of March because people were getting out of the cold.
All right. 240, you say. We shall see.
Yeah,
Diane Swonk.
We shall see.
Diane Swonk, Mesirow Financial. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now let's check the numbers. 33.5 minutes into the trading day, the Dow is up 11 points to 16,584. The S&P 500 is up one scant point. The NASDAQ is up 3 points, not even a 10%. The European Central Bank held interest rates steady today. The yield on the U.S. government's 10-year note is up slightly to 2.8% now. The Russian state-owned company that sells natural gas to Ukraine has just raised the price sharply for the second time in 3 days. Ukraine's energy minister this morning said Gazprom's new price is too high and that the hike was politically motivated. There are new questions this morning about whether banking giant Citigroup is doing enough to stop fraud and money laundering. The New York Times reports today that federal authorities have launched a criminal investigation into how Citigroup found itself vulnerable to a $400 million fraud at one of its Mexican units. Federal prosecutors in Massachusetts are separately looking into whether the bank was lax about money laundering by clients. Outcomes follow metrics, they say at B-School. Now, you might get what you measure is one translation for the rest of us. As more dollars change hands, why aren't the outcomes sometimes better? There's a new listing of 132 countries out today using not gross domestic product, but rankings by health and safety, the environment, personal rights, and freedom. It's called the Social Progress Indicator, and Michael Green is CEO of the outfit that puts it together called the Social Progress Imperative. Mr. Green, good morning.
Good morning, David.
So you're trying to measure not just money changing hands, as gross domestic product does, but well-being. What have you found, according to your latest set of data that's just come in?
Well, the number one performing country in the world is New Zealand. And New Zealand's really interesting because it's the top country on social progress, but it's only the 25th country in the world in terms of GDP per capita. By contrast, the United States is only 16th on social progress.
So all this economic activity, that's what GDP is measuring, one would expect the United States would have more to show for it. Where are we deficient, according to this?
Where the United States falls down is on a whole bunch of basic services, things like the school system. The United States gets 39th overall on that. We also see problems around safety. Crime is a problem. There's also a surprising result for the home of Silicon Valley that access to information and communications is not great.
That's almost shocking. For instance, if you take a look at your data on percentage of people who actually have access to cell phones, the U.S. doesn't do all that well.
not compared to a whole host of other countries. I mean, only 81% of the population being internet users, that's almost 10 percentage points lower than a lot of other countries. And we know access to information is really important to people, to their quality of life. So there is a sort of deficit there.
But it's your hope these data, the social progress indicator, will help people understand that sort of an arms race headed toward more GDP does not necessarily lift up a population.
Don't get me wrong, GDP really helps, but it isn't the whole story. We need to broaden the frame when we talk about success for a country and use measures like this to say, is our economic success giving us better lives? And if it's not, then we should maybe think about other policies, other things we need to do, other social innovations.
The alternative measure today is called the Social Progress Index. The organization that puts it out is the Social Progress Imperative. The CEO there, Michael Green, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David.
And if you feel your job is making your brain explode, maybe that's a good thing. The new Journal of Occupational Health Psychology has a study using long-term data showing a demanding job helps keep the cognitive functioning going before retirement and can slow the brain's decline after retirement. Does it have to be work? No. The study suggests an engrossing hobby might also be good for the brain. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.